His mistress could not keep his thoughts somewhere other than this night. He had to face this night himself. As much as he tried, it all crashed in on his brain like a wave that kept getting bigger and bigger, coming at him with a relentless force. He could feel this maddening, nagging guilt. He had never felt that before. It was there now, gnawing at him, shattering the rest he had come here for. It came over him with such a sharp and stabbing presence he thought he would never be over it. Here, immersed completely underwater an uncomfortably long time, his thoughts conflicted out of sync. He had never before experienced this feeling. Was he facing death? As he lingered below the surface, the spa water seeped into his bones, and farther, the heat mingled with his blood and it would not allow him to die but to face the livid course he was on. He wished to be on his yacht in port partying like he had, wildly and unabashed, or at his house with his grandson who made his life bearable. Why here, at his favorite healing spa, could peace not come? Why had the bottle of scotch not taken effect, done its job, blocked off his mind from his soul? It all was there in front of him like the headlights of a train coming at him in a dark tunnel. Faster, closer, brighter. He couldn't shut out the noise of it all, yet the room was silent. He couldn't stop seeing the faces, yet the spa was empty. Down under the water he wished it all to end. He wanted to stay here till it did and he passed over to that peaceful beyond where his soul could rest, but perhaps there was no rest for him. Could not the steamy water take it from him? Was this what guilt was? A tormented unending torture? A plague of the mind that he would spend eternity with? Chapter 90 Titanic, 1912 Titanic was well past saving now. It was too gruesome. Death was all around, imminent death. The innards of the boiler and the deck were torn and ripped outward. The horrific sound of explosions, the metal twisting and screaming filled the air till all went silent and the sounds of the crushing steel pressured by the sea were the last calls of torment. Bodies filled the sea, floating in life vests that couldn't save them from the cold. It was known at this temperature there was about a 15-minute window between life and the freezing of the vital organs that would take precious life. As those in the few surviving lifeboats made their way from the wake, they saw in horror what the dead would never tell. Just being in the lifeboats didn't mean they would live. Maybe it was just sparing them a few more hours. Their minds were tortured by the sight they had just seen. Maybe the ones that were better off were the dead, the ones who froze quickly, or had been killed in the explosion. They didn't know if they were to be saved. Would they make it through the freezing night? Would they see the light of a ship to come to their rescue? They had no radio. Had the wireless room gotten through? They had no idea. Had anyone heard the distress call, or was all lost, like with the rockets? Should they stay in the vicinity or row in the chance they could make it to some shore? Without navigation, was there any chance that they could save themselves? Who would be first to their rescue? All they wanted was to see a vessel respond to their need, the blessed twinkling lights of a rescue ship, lights coming over the dark horizon that would mean their lives would be spared. They wanted to live to tell it all. They had to. And they would never stop thinking about this night. Chapter 91 Aix-Spa, France, 1912 Could God be so cruel? Morgan needed air. These few moments under the water seemed endless. His lungs felt the mounting pressure. He would now pass out. He was ready to quit the facade. All his years in church now seemed fake. Had he really prayed or had he really sought God? Had he gone there to church only to placate himself so others thought well of him? It all seemed important now, and he wanted to be there at the church, in some deep prayer that could take him away from this dirty place that tormented his mind. Naked he was, in the waters that could cleanse his body, but not his soul. Clean he was, but he felt dirty. It was all too cruel. He was all too cruel. He needed air or death. That was the choice? Morgan emerged with a sudden rush from under the water. He gasped for air. He breathed deeply, steadily, slowly. Each breath of air he took required a huge effort, it seemed. He was completely focused, silently contemplating his indefensible actions. He was no longer the same man as before. He was experiencing a totally foreign emotion now, one he had never known before, remorse. He was distant from himself. Chapter 92. RMS Carpathia, 1912. Captain Rostron was shocked to see the silent sadness as his ship made its way that dark morning. The freezing waters had never seen so many dead. A few lifeboats came into view and then more. So few boats, so few alive. "Sir, lifeboats, sir," said the first officer. "That's it?" came Captain Rostron. "Where are the rest of the lifeboats?" asked Cottam. "Holy God! Where are the other lifeboats?" Rostron was shocked. They couldn't believe it. But they knew it was a loss. They took their hats off as they passed the first bodies. "God," the word passed over his lips. Cottam's tear landed splat on the deck as it fell off his cheek. He had never seen the likes of this, the magnitude. He had never witnessed death. He couldn't hold back. He tried to focus on the ones that were saved. It was assured that death was final and cruel. Parts of the ship were blown about. Pieces of the grand staircase floated by. The curve of design was unmistakable. The sight was unbelievable. Even though Rostron thought he was prepared for this, he was not. No one could believe that the dead, white-faced bodies and the floating debris were all that remained of the greatest liner that ever was. The crew gathered up the frozen passengers. Their job now was to get the survivors on board and give them medical attention. They tried to get all the names and any information anyone was willing to give. "She sank. We saw her," Madeline said. "She exploded." "She broke in two," said Minerva Dean as she told her story. The others shunned Ismay. They knew he had deceived his way into a lifeboat. "The captain?" Rostron asked. "Don't know," said Ismay as he sipped brandy. "Radio the message. Titanic sunk. 710 saved," Rostron ordered. Then Ismay seemed to impress something upon the captain, but no one could hear. It just seemed the captain took quickly to the bridge and then the ship headed to New York. As Cottam made his way to the radio room, the despair in his heart would not cease its sorrow. The bodies were left bobbing in the Atlantic. Chapter 93. Nemo, 1993. The jolt to Nemo hit hard. Masters, Jones and Jade were all terrified. "Shit, what was that?" Jones managed. Jade looked frantically at Masters, wanting some reassurance, but there was none forthcoming. Masters was trying buttons and switches to no avail. They were in a bad situation. Jade looked nervously out of the porthole window. The ocean looked black and depressive, the water, extremely foreboding and infinite. The radio equipment had stopped working completely. Masters shut off the alarms that were driving him mad. Visual and audio were all too much for his nerves. He was trying to think of a way to get out of this, think of a way to not get them all killed. Why were no answers coming? His great plan was failing him now. He knew the risks. Why had he brought Jay down? It all seemed pointless now. Jade had never seen his face take on such look of concern, and it made his hard edge soften to another kind of edge, survival. He had no time to be judgmental or focused on his love for Titanic. It was him against the scene now. Jade saw it all in his face. He didn't have to say it. He was trying everything to save Nemo. But he didn't have the wherewithal. John scratched his stubble, certain of death's awkward call. But he never blamed Masters. He had always leaned to Masters as a real man's man, and he enjoyed his exceptional company, the camaraderie he felt part of when he was on these ventures. It was a rush, getting in these subs and seeing the water so far below, a sight few would ever see. He had the pleasure of Masters' company, and he could think of no better man to die with. Not that he was giving up, he didn't even have time to think about it, but it was stashed away there in his heart. John's was a good man to be with, better than most, though a bit high-strung with his weak spot for the treasures. Out in ocean things did not look good for them. Nemo, tangled in the cargo lift, began to turn ass end up and bashed into Titanic. Inside, they all fell together to the window. It seemed a long time tumbling around. Jade fell into John's, then into Masters. She caught the frightened glimpse in Masters, as their eyes passed in that instant of a moment as they tumbled. She could see the fear men so rarely like to show. It was there. Terror struck John's face as he looked to Masters for some quick sign of hope. They adjusted to their new positions, tangled in a pile on the port window. Jade's frantic face looked out Nemo's eye window as they mingled so close, in a pile together. Masters tried not to step on the others as he nervously positioned himself to watch the pressure gauge move up. He'd had rough times, but this was definitely the most threatening situation he had ever been in. He could only remain so calm. He was only so adept at getting out of a situation. Is this it? Is this the end? Is this all I get? He wondered the great wonder we all ask now and then. It crossed Master's mind. Matter of fact, he couldn't get rid of it. Jade wondered it too. She saw it on Master's face. It must have shown on hers too. She had never thought her life would be ended in such a way. Would they even be able to come get her body? Would they be down here forever like Titanic? Is this her fate? She thought. These questions rushed through her mind, coming fast and overlapping in an instant. She forgot everything. The documentary, the purpose of the mission, it all came to this moment to survive. She looked to Masters, but he was not wasting time in thought. He tried everything up at the dash. To Jade, it seemed as if the sea was watching them, waiting for an opportunity to grasp any small weakness in their tiny craft and then send instant death crashing in on them, crushing the life force from them without a second thought or even a backward glance. But it was not that the sea was evil. It was man's technology that was testing it. As Flynn had said days ago. We are here but an instant, the sea lives on, she thought. Shit. Sonar is off. Nautilus. Can you hear me? Over, Master's urgent voice pleaded into the intercom. Dudley, topside, do you read me? Over. He tried desperately to contact anyone who was listening. The only reply was a kind of scratchy silence from the speaker. Johns looked out of the porthole window in desperation, trying to hold his nerve as the submersible creaked with the strange, unnerving sounds of metal adjusting to changes as the pressure within the craft began to decrease. They all stared at each other, watching for a small reassurance of some kind of hope being displayed in each other's faces, waiting for what might happen next, terrified to be resigned to their fate, scared shitless of a sudden implosion. No one spoke as Masters frantically tried switches, dials and buttons, without eliciting any response from the now crippled craft. The little sub was obviously in dire trouble. Jade managed to hang on to her handheld camera. She hit the light on it as it filmed Titanic through Nemo's eye window. Her face looked out through the window, trying to use the camera's light to see anything she could. She saw the hull of Titanic staring back as they hung there. "There's a manual switch for the exterior cam, to the left, the round one with the M. See? Hurry, hurry." Master's words came fast. In the upside-down position, it was hard to figure where things were. Bumping into Masters and Johns, trying to kneel at the dash, she made her way to the camera controls. Jay turned the exterior camera manually and what was able to see that they were tangled in the cargo lift cable. "This tangle won't hold, we have to grab the cable," she warned him. In fact, she saw it slipping. They felt the jolt as it did. "What the fuck, boss?" Johns asked in a frantic quest for some assurance. "What now?" "We're hanging on, this fucker's gonna slip from the cargo lift." "Fuck, can Nautilus free us?" "Come on, radio." Johns leaned his arm against his stubble chin. "Nautilus, can you read me?" "Over." "Angle the camera. Can you see anything?" "Where is she?" Masters turned, with no time to waste and with an extreme energy to his words. "Grab it with the bot arms." Masters tried to move the mechanical arms. The arms started slowly and came forward. "We got action here. Angle that camera so I can see what I'm doing." "I'm blind here," Masters urged her. Jade rotated the exterior cam. Masters could now see it on the monitor. He moved the arm out and grabbed at the cable. He grabbed and missed. He grabbed again and missed. He grabbed and this time it held. They felt a sigh of relief. They hung on. Dot. But the metal arm slipped on the metal cable. They fell, helpless. "We're going down." "Oh, shit. Shit. Shit," said Master's voice under his breath, the words you never wanted to hear. "Come on, Nautilus, can you read me?" "Over," growled Johns at the dead instrument in desperation. "Turn the camera. Can you see anything? Any lights? Anything at all?" Masters hurried to do what he could in the moments left. "Power off," Masters suddenly ordered. "What?" said Johns. "You're crazy?" "Power off now, I said," Masters repeated, more forcefully this time. "Fuck that," Johns replied even more forcibly. "Think this through. We are going to crash land now." Masters was impatient. "The lights will implode and everything will short out. Power off now. We'll fall on down there and hit bottom. At least hope we don't short." He rushed to secure what he could. "Get the flashlights. We're going down ass up. This glass better hold up. Secure the dash." "Fucking hell, man. What if we can power up?" thought Johns. Hit a point, but it mattered little, as they were screwed either way. Now they were falling down the vast wall of Titanic's hull. The submersible bumped, scraped and crashed into Titanic as it unwillingly sank, tilting first this way, then that, without Nemo's motor-driven stabilizers to keep them level. Perhaps more alarmingly, The internal pressure gauge showed it was decreasing rapidly, but that mattered little, for Masters was sure that the crash landing would implode a little craft. The thought surely launched him to an instinctual modus operandi. Jones shut down the power without another word. The submersible went completely dark except for the beams from the flashlights and the light from Jade's camera. Nemo sank a lonely descent down the face of Titanic's hull to the seafloor. Jade was scared. It was a bad feeling. She had never been so scared before. She recalled her first dive the previous week and how scared she had been then, but that, she remembered, was nothing compared to this. How she wished it would all stop and like a bad dream she would wake from this nightmare, but this was a night stallion, a raging fright that shook her terrified, and she wasn't asleep. Her mind froze up, pending death. The unknown beyond, the big sleep, it all flashed through the portals of her brain, bypassing the short circuit of shock and hitting directly on that place where you make your peace and write off this life, this dear and wanted life. The breath and the air she had taken for granted would be useless to her still and lifeless body. It all seemed trivial, the things she had done up to this moment. She was glad she had pursued Titanic and only sorry no one would ever know what she had discovered, this great mystery that lay 2 miles below the sea. Now she thought she too would lie here with Titanic. She thought what a perfect ending for Masters, but not for her. She wanted more life. Fuck, she thought. Come on God, sweet Jesus. Wasn't I elated just minutes ago? She thought. Dot minutes ago, when life seemed all there, with visions of those engraved letters of Olympic, and triumph so close. Even Masters had seemed to admit she had not searched these secrets in vain. But now it all seemed lost. She seemed disconnected from that Jade. Now none of it mattered. It stuck in her head. Her victory, her triumph and the exhilaration of just a few minutes ago were drowned completely, in the fear of Nemo's perilous descent to the deep. She went through the motions of securing the equipment to prepare for the imminent crash landing, but how could she prepare herself mentally for the end, hoping against hope that it would be as quick and painless as they had all promised her, all those days ago. Masters secured whatever he could too, while Jade glanced through the porthole window, seeing Titanic's bow. Her life flashed before her eyes. She found herself back at that warm spring morning when she was 5 years old and the father that she had seen only 3 times in her life previously, arrived to collect her from her grandparents' house in Colchester, England. The tearful farewells flashed in her mind and the long airplane ride to America, an alien place at first to her, a different way of life and a different culture, which she noticed and found strange at first, even at that young age. She recalled her first day at her new school and how everyone spoke really differently from what she had become accustomed to, so far in her short life. She thought of her dad and how he had been too young to die and remembered the terrible day when her school principal had entered the classroom, that morning when she was in 10th grade, and asked her to accompany him back to his office, where the 2 police officers and the welfare worker had broken the news to her about his accident. The strange numbness she felt now was such a similar feeling to the one she felt that day, and now the cycle was almost complete. That was all a long time in the past. However, what a strange way to die, she thought. Nemo's inexorable freefall continued down the wall of Titanic's blackened, rusting frame, towards the ocean bottom. Suddenly, Jade was brought out of her solemn trance at John's rushed comment. The purser's safe. We're gonna crash into it? Masters turned and saw John's mesmerized at his elusive prize. If we hit it, it'll crack this window. The reality shut John's up. He said nothing as he prepared for the crash. He could see it now, getting closer and closer. They all sucked in their breath, expecting the worst. Bam. The port light imploded on impact and they were all thrown backwards. Nemo hit the ocean floor with a bone-jarring thud, just missing the safe. It looked like lightning out Nemo's eye window as the lights imploded. Everything lit up, like fireworks had hit. It lit Titanic, the safe, and the sea bottom. The safe was within touching distance now, but so unreachable. It may as well have been in the Pacific Ocean, let alone right next to Nemo. They sat there, silent and frightened. Was that the worst of it? Don't move, Masters gritted his teeth. As the sand settled from the impact, it became clear that the exterior cameras were gone. Let's get our bearings. Give me some options, numbers, damage. Any goddamned thing, he blustered in desperation. Masters grabbed the flashlight and shone it all around, assessing the damage. She shorted out. If we try to turn her on, anything could happen, Johns feared. The radio's dead, said Masters. The circuits are fried, Johns insisted. They all looked at each other, unsure what to do. Send SOS out the porthole, with the flashlights, Masters ordered, more in desperation than anything else. If we sit here, we use up air. Then Jade had an idea. Sinbad's light may still work, said Jade. Try the remote, that should be okay, agreed Johns. Yeah, said Masters, a little more hopeful. He looked out of the porthole, desperate to get some lights activated on Sinbad so that Flint could see them and realize their desperate predicament. Masters moved the remote. Sinbad wouldn't budge. The little bot was stuck. Try its light, she said. Its light turned on and shone, pointing out, luckily, to where it would do some good. Mark our position. Come on, Flynn, you gotta see us, Masters added. He must be focused on getting ready to cut the hull. Sinbad's light shone onto a pair of laced-up ladies' boots on the ocean floor. The body had disintegrated from them, just gone. Jade saw them through the porthole window, and then the small, child's boots lying next to them in the sand. It shattered her thoughts and wrenched her insides. These empty boots were a reminder of life's short, unkind reality. It was horror to gaze at those empty boots. Did she have other children? Who were these souls left in the frigid waters below? Were they marked among the dead passenger list? What was her story? Jade felt they would soon meet, souls having passed in the sea, there together, friends forever. The realization hit hard. Titanic's tragedy was this woman and her child who never made their destination. These were lives, real people. Their bodies had probably been devoured a century ago by the ancestors of the sea creatures all around them. Jade shuddered at the thought. She would die inside Nemo or be imploded to bits. How long would Nemo last? If we all die in here, when we just draw, our bodies disintegrating into the next century? Jade thought. We've got no power at all, exclaimed Johns. What about the O-power? Masters fired back at him. They had to think quickly now. There could be any damn kind of problem with the pressure. We can't risk it, John said as he looked out at the safe and knew he had missed his chance. He turned back to Masters, desperately looking at the various gauges. He was here in a situation that made him helpless. He lashed out. We were so damned close, he grumbled. He looked at Masters and then at Jade. He was pissed. The dim emergency light made it hard to see Masters' eyes, but his anger surfaced. You were so close to bringing that up about the switch. You better tell her. Johns went on.
Tell me what? She asked.
He told Dudley, John said.
What? She asked.
They're going to destroy all your stuff, he said to her. Then he turned to Masters.
Tell her.
Go on.
Tell her what you told him. Johns railed.
Masters felt guilty, sure he did, but not enough to confess. He rubbed his chin and gave a piercing look to Johns.
John's eyes looked hard as his brows lifted for an answer.
Turned toward him, John's didn't have to move far to be face to face.
There their eyes locked.
John's were judgmental, wanting, bringing out some deep guilt that Masters had thought he had buried. The fear of death brought out strange truths about people. Masters turned, ignoring him as he looked for the problem, checking out the dash with his flashlight.
Damn it.
Find some answers. What is he saying? She needed to know how bad it was. She felt so let down. She needed to hear it from his own lips.
Try the O, said Masters.
Concentrate on the problem, damn it. John's hand feared it move. He froze.
Masters tried it but nothing happened.
Tell her, John's didn't let up. Why should he? Masters had never intended to get the gold. He'd been stringing them along all this time. And now he put them in this danger. He was probably gonna die. Masters would come off as the good guy. It just all felt wrong.
You're the man we're supposed to trust. Her soft eyes seemed to look so deep into his he turned away embarrassed, hurt.
This is no time to lie, flared Johns. With the fright of death so close he tested the waters of Masters' own soul.
Why don't you just leave it? Said Masters.
Leave it.
What did you tell Dudley?
Her eyes searched his.
It can't be true.
All right. He slammed his hand on his knee and ran his hand over his mouth.
All right.
He sat back, hating this moment. He took a breath. Then the words came cold. I thought you were going to expose everything. I blamed you so it would stall the venture. I said you were the reason for the hang-up. Then Dudley wanted your tapes. To destroy them and destroy your script. He leaned forward and lowered his eyes out the porthole, still aware of the danger. He ran his hand through his hair nervously, forgetting about what mattered to Dudley. You were writing stuff he wouldn't want out there. I didn't mean it, but I couldn't let either one of you destroy Titanic. I told him what you were doing. He'd never have let you do a story on a keel or a switch, anyway. Masters couldn't believe he had to confess like this. How it wrenched senses. He's probably up there now tossing your story overboard.
What? Jade could not believe it.
All you had to do was just film the last trip to Titanic, he said. What was so hard about that?
Just. Masters defended. But you didn't do that. He sighed. What's any of it matter now?
Masters was removed now, wanting to hide in his old self. He pointed the flashlight out around in the sand looking for a way out of this difficult trouble.
My tapes, my work, you did that. She fought.
It belonged to the company, you'd never get it out there. He hardened.
You son of bit, she was ruined.
Jade was trodden, her work destroyed, the secrets would never be known. She was disappointed in Masters. The moment I thought he was really going to be real, he turns out to be just a cad, she thought. She wanted to yell at him. It was instinct. It would have been easy to confront him.
But then she thought, what a waste. She would not even give Masters the dignity of a good fight. She just wrote him off as useless and unworthy. It was unrealistic that she would ever get this story out, he was right. Jay turned and looked back to the window in hopes of seeing Nautilus. She sent SOS with a flashlight. It was more important to survive. Where the hell is Flynn? Said Johns. Johns played a light from Sinbad all around in the sand whilst still trying to find Nautilus. He spotted the safe. Nemo sat side by side with Titanic, both on the ocean floor and from the looks of it bound to stay there. Jade gave a last look, hoping to see the rescue. Her breaths were short and quick, confirming her panic had not gone. Suddenly Jade saw lights out the porthole. She motioned the others. Nautilus, I see it. It's coming over, she said. Thank God. Masters squeezed closer to her and Johns to look. On board Nautilus, Flynn alerted Danny. We got to hurry, get moving, said Flynn. Max sat watching, wanting to do something. Back on the surface, Dudley got the call from Flynn. He realized the severity of the situation. Atlantic Siren, we got a situation here. Nemo is down, looks like she is dark, a possible no power situation. Over, Flynn's voice came over the radio. Roger that, Dudley strained to hear. He brought Nautilus close to Nemo's eye window. Window to window, Flynn motioned to Masters. He made some gestures that he was going to pull the cargo lift to them. Flynn radioed to Dudley. Bring over the cargo lift. I'll see if I can clamp on Nemo's arm and we can pull her up. Just hurry, copy. Roger that, Dudley's gruff voice boomed through the speaker. Give me a reading. Siren, Flynn replied. Angle it to 373. Over. 373. Over, said Dudley. In Nautilus, Flynn stretched out Nemo's remote arm, trying desperately to attach it to the cargo chain. But, at the first attempt, he dropped it. Hang on, Flynn sweated. He pulled at Nemo's remote arm a second time and maneuvered, but it limply fell away, another failure. Nautilus' arm handles stretched out once more, pulling the cargo net, and Flynn watched in disappointment as it fell to the ocean floor. Shit, Flynn looked at his watch. Time was slipping away and so was the hope of gripping Nemo to the cargo lift. Mac urged him on. They waited, hopefully and expectantly, for Flynn to make another attempt. The clock ticked on and time was their deadly enemy now. It was only a few minutes before they all would have to leave the ocean floor, if they were to negotiate the 3-hour journey back to the surface and allow for the essential, glaring detail of air. Flynn checked his watch, and then the oxygen gauge, nervously. With precious little time left to rescue the crew in Nemo, it made his task all the more difficult. He grabbed the lever. Come on, little guy, he said. Again it slipped. He wrote something and held it up to the porthole for Masters to see. Grab cable, it said. You go up. Masters got the drift as he glanced at the oxygen level readings in his watch. It was too cold to sweat the way his nerves wanted him to. Flynn tried again, but the arm wouldn't stay attached to the chain. Come on, you son of a bitch, grab it. Grab a hold, Flynn said. Mac couldn't believe what was happening. Flynn motioned that he must now go up, with a single finger pointed skywards. We can't leave him here. Mac was frantic. It won't hold it. What do you want me to do?
It won't damn stay, Flynn yelled.
You can't leave Em there.
Damn it,
said Mac.
We have to go, Flynn urged.
No, wait.
Come on, Mac asked.
Give it one more try.
Please, Mac pleaded, his arm now wrenching at Flynn's to try once more.
We have to go.
Now, Flynn pushed Mac's arm off. He knew he wanted to save Jade, but Flynn knew better than anyone you didn't stretch your own sub to the limit. There was nothing else he could do.
We have to go, he said.
Please, said Mac again. Tears welled up in his eyes and rolled slowly down his cheeks. He was not ashamed.
There's no more time, Danny said.
They knew the risk.
Mac said nothing. He simply wept silently. His agony was intense.
Jane watched out of the port window as Flynn took another stab at it. He opened the arm and then it snapped right on and closed.
Oh yeah, said Flynn.
This time it held.
You got him, Siren.
Over, said Danny excitedly to Dudley, back on the mothership. They're clamped on. Pull, gentle, pull.
Over, Danny eased his words into the radio to Dudley.
Jade looked at Masters in expectation and then, totally unexpectedly, Nemo began to move. The grip on the arm had pulled Nemo a short distance. Jade held a glimmer of hope as she felt them lift.
Jones was numb inside. His emotions, hopes, expectancy, fear and dread all mingled together to cancel each other out.
Masters wrote a message on the back of a manual and placed it up against the porthole window.
We'll need air, he mouthed as he held it for Flynn.
Then he wrote more. Send tanks to 350 feet.
We're out of here.
Over, said Flynn.
We're gonna need air.
Good to go.
Over, came Dudley's voice over the radio to Nautilus.
Steady away.
Over, said Danny, but he knew that Nemo had little chance, for without power they would not make it in time. They would run out of oxygen.
There was a jolt as the slack in the 2.5-mile-long cable was taken up by the weight of Nemo. Shakily, but slowly and steadily they were leaving behind the ocean floor at last as the long, nerve-wracking journey home began.
Is it holding?
Copy, asked Dudley, expectantly.
It has to, Flynn whispered in hope.
Copy that, replied Dudley. Nautilus, over and out. Mac stared out of the port window at Jade in the other little sub. She put her hand on the glass as if she could touch Mac's hand. He placed his hand on the porthole, as if they were touching through it. Condensation from her breath held on the glass as she said her goodbye. At least they had a chance now. She was glad Mac was safe.
Fucking great. What now? Said Johns.
Masters motioned for him to be quiet. It was the air supply that was the critical issue. Whether they would be close enough to the surface before the oxygen tanks completely emptied out was a race against time. Jade's breath still hung on the glass. By the time it had cleared it, Nautilus was gone. It was at least 60 feet above them and out of sight already on its journey back home to the land of the living. Nemo moved upwards at a disturbingly slow pace and the tension continued for more than an hour.
This is the shits, said Johns.
Don't talk. Lay still, don't use up air. Masters wanted to make it. Nemo's arm slipped further down the cable from its grip. Inside they felt the jolt.
Masters shined the light out the eye window. He clutched the handle tight. Nemo's arm slipped a bit more away from the grip on the cargo lift, their last ride up. He drew a breath and looked at Jade. She stared at the cable as if that and her hopes of surviving could make a difference. With each slip, the Nemo took a jolt till it found rest on the snug slot. Jade could barely deal with it. It was more terrifying than she could imagine. With each slip, the jolt was like a reminder of dear life's end, close at hand. Astros took off his sweater and gave it to Jade. "Don't move. We can make it. Hold tight," Astros assured her. They were now struggling to breathe. "It's bad," John's solemn tone was discouraging. Jade watched Nemo's arm. Although it was hardly attached, the weight of Nemo in the water did not pull it free. The pressure gauge read fine as they rose, slow, but the oxygen would be critical. John's eyed the box where the oxygen mask was. The carbon dioxide level was now affecting their judgment. The pressure was fine, but Masters could hardly function without oxygen. Jade watched the cable, her breath against the window barely held much force. Upside down, they were pulled. They were all too starved of oxygen to speak or complain. They were staring death squarely in the face now. Whether or not the arm held firm, it would make little difference if they were to suffocate. They looked around desperately at each other. How long would it hold? Then another jolt came, as the grip of the cargo lift slipped a bit more. John's critical judgment was gone. He feared for his life. He was lightheaded, his lungs ached for air feeling tight. His judgment was impaired as the carbon he sucked in, with his last effort. He went for the emergency oxygen mask. "Give me that fucking air," he cringed as he lunged for it. Masters grabbed him and they fell against the dash. Weak without oxygen, it was hard to fight. Masters had to win. He grabbed John's, determined that he would get the canister. Choking him, he squeezed the last bit of air out of him. Johns managed to reach out his hand and grab the flashlight. It swung heavy in his hand and bashed Masters in the head. A deep gash laid open his forehead. Blood dripped into his eye. But he didn't let go of the throat he was fixated on. "I say who gets it," said Masters through his clenched jaw. Johns looked passed out or dead. Masters let go of him. Jade held on, but her judgment was slipping away. Her condition was critical. Masters waited till the last possible moment to use the mask. He guarded it. "This last little bit of air will make all the difference for one of the three to last a bit longer." Jade was near passed out. She'd felt it coming on. The stages, first the lightheaded feeling, then the shallow hollow sunken tight lungs that ached for air, then the feeling of impaired judgment as the carbon was sucked in, then the sleepy, dizzy, headaches and heaviness set in. Everything felt heavy, all her body parts felt heavy. She could feel them shut down and yet her heart sounded like a sour drum ready to explode. Masters watched Jade's breath. He put a mirror under her nose. Not much was showing there. He looked at her a long moment, fighting the heaviness that now seeped into his entire body. He looked to John's, who was passed out or worse. He put the mirror under John's nose. He was gone. He got close to Jade as the one flashlight dimmed and died. He reached over to her hand, still gripping her camera. He gently lifted it and opened the tiny back compartment of her camera and took the batteries. He hoped they had more juice. He put them in the flashlight. His cognitive judgment was gone. The cool water was soon to be his home, and the great journey that invited him now. It was now the moment of who would get the last minutes of air in the oxygen canister. he could fumble a bit and slip the mask on. It would only be moments before his aching lungs would be filled and his functions subside. He could take it and stop gulping for air as his burning veins required. He took off his jacket and wrapped Jade in it, then lifted her head and wrapped his arm around her and held her as he placed the air mask on her. He pulled her close, squeezing her till she inhaled and he heard the soft faint gasp. His last sight was Jade's face, so close as his vision went dark, taking with it the last beat of his heart, as the sound of his soul stilled. Nemo was silent. It was but moments since his life had passed that her lungs were slowly getting air enough to start her coming around. Even drained as she was, she instinctively sucked in a breath. The air was life itself. It soothed the aching lungs' need for oxygen. It called her back till her foggy head was fighting the deep shut-down functions that her limbs had succumbed to. The ringing caused by lack of oxygen hit her heart as she felt the mask and managed another breath, slowly trying to gain her bearings and clear her state of mind. Too little oxygen had left her feeling smothered. As her eyes focused and realized again her tragic situation, she felt herself in Master's arms, with the reaction to bury her head into his chest, but it all felt wrong. Where was that warmth that had surrendered to this tenderness? If only she could linger in his caress a moment as he lay motionless at peace. His arms felt lifeless. She realized that he had saved her. He looked as if perhaps he now had the clear conscience he had seemed deprived of, as if perhaps he was free of such torment that she had seen in his eyes. She hoped so. As her tears fell from her cheek, she took his hand and unwrapped from his hug. It was frightening without him. All surety had gone even as she looked out the porthole with a flashlight. She alone was left in this submersible. Masters had saved her, but for what? She'd soon see her future as lifeless as the bodies that now accompanied her. She looked out the port. All was quiet as she ascended in the dark. The cable still hung on the cargo lift at 600 feet. Chapter 94. Nemo 1993. Jade was sure there was a hint of a smile on Master's lips as she looked at him fumbling to put on his jacket, but her movements were now too clumsy, too awkward to achieve that great feat, so she contented herself with simply wrapping herself in it as best she could. She wiped away her hair, sucked in from the mask and breathed slowly, deeply. Her head cleared slightly more as the little submersible continued its slow ascent, still clinging on desperately to the cargo lift. She knew that her ordeal had still not ended. Not by a long way. She glanced at the altimeter. It read 580 feet below the surface. So near and yet so far, she thought. The cable still held. Curious fish were now investigating the strange cargo lift and its helpless cargo. Then, once again her breathing became slow and shallow as the last bit of oxygen was squeezed into her lungs from the emergency supply canister. Slow and shallow breaths were about all she could muster. As the last bit of air was used up, she drifted in and out of reality. Out in the sea, Billy and Greg had dived on down to the deepest depth they could stand, bringing the tanks down on an extended line. They saw Nautilus pass them. Descending at a depth of 100 feet, Billy looked at his meter and motioned as he passed Nautilus going up as he descended. "They're holding on, I hope," said Flynn to himself, already using the emergency oxygen. Shit. The drivers made their way to a depth where the pressure was almost unbearable for them. They still had to save Nemo. Every moment was drenched in the fear of her snapping off the remote arm, sending the three inside to an inevitable watery grave. Jade was now in cognitive unrest. The mind deprived of air did strange things. She saw images, visions of lights. Her thoughts were going in and out. Her limbs seemed detached. She was sure now she was dying. She could see the white light that so many describe that you see before the end, and then she saw the faces of angels. She heard her heart pound as it cried for oxygen. She heard it loud. It turned into a sound of metal hitting glass. It pulled her to focus on the window, and then she saw the face of Billy there staring in the port window, frantically trying to rouse her from her desperate state. From what Billy saw, Masters was dead and Johns, but Jade was alive. He saw the cable was barely hanging onto Nemo. He had to get her out. The cabin was filled with carbon dioxide. There was no way to neutralize the pressure so they could open it. The force of the cable needed to hold for what Greg had in mind. They were doing hand signals to get it secured, wrapping extra wire to hold it. Jade saw him now and forced all her effort to get to the window. Her limbs were so heavy and her senses were blurred, giddy, slow, as if it wasn't her body. It was so hard to focus. She was now taking in more CO2 than oxygen. Overall, she had lost cognitive functioning. Billy gestured through the window. She questioned what he meant. Greg worked on securing the wire wraps on the cable to hold Nemo's weight. They had to equalize the pressure. They had to get her out faster than the water would rush in. Jade was breathing in short, sharp bursts and draining every last drop of the air from the canister. Billy was frantic at the porthole window. He pointed and gestured. Jade was lost to what he wanted. Then, shit, she got it. He was going to open the hatch. Oh God, no, she thought. He opened it. Water gushed in tons of it. The sound thrust as the pressure hit her chest. Water came at her, freezing her limbs in an instant. Nemo began to sink as the cabin filled, the water coming at her hard, sucking the life out of her, pushing her back and taking the last bit of air from the tank. Nemo was too heavy for the line. Jade held her breath and went under. She looked out the window into the strange dark sea as the water pushed her back into Nemo. Wang. One of the three wires on the tie to the cable snapped. The added weight of the water strained the retaining arm on the cargo lift and it yanked loose. Jade's lungs were spent as she went under. As she tried to get out, the sea held her back, rushing into Nemo as it filled with water and began to sink. Wang. Another wire snapped. A ton of water weighted her down and Nemo was going back right where she came from. Billy had to work fast. Underwater, Jade saw Master's body float into her, his face still and cold. The last wire on the tie to the cable snapped. Nemo started to go down fast. Billy was pulled along, hanging on. He had to find Jade through the gushing water. Jade held the flashlight and pushed Masters out of her way so she could get out. She felt the fire in her lungs deprived of breath. As she grabbed for Billy's hand, his air piece slipped into her mouth. As her lips sucked the precious air, Jade turned to watch Nemo sink into the blackness of the North Atlantic till she could no longer see it. Nemo descended into the dark, foreboding sea. It was her last ride. She sank easily, and silently came to rest in the soft sand, forever to lie beside Olympic. About the author. Paige Patrick was raised in Hollywood, California, and lives nestled away in her nook in the hills just outside the Los Angeles area. She is a film editor, writer, and author, with a passionate interest in the issues that affect societies at a core level. As a mother, she responds to the call to create a better world for our children and theirs. Her work educates and informs the public, and her hope is to stimulate new pathways and approaches to the future, based on nature-friendly, sustainable models. With her extensive research skills, Paytree has written and directed several films and award-winning documentaries. Her work connects the dots between various sectors of information, with paradigm-shifting results. Titanic, A Perfect Crime is her first novel and is the first book in a trilogy to follow. This audiobook has been compiled by Bipolar Bob specifically for the Pirate Bay using technologies developed by Microsoft and Amazon. Please visit Bob's website at www.bipolarbob.me. You can also email Bob on bob@bipolarbob.me.